The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I start with a kind of talk and then see if there's any comments or questions. And tonight I'd like to flip that around. So I wanted to start and see if there's any questions about anything, about your practice, about your meditation, about practice in daily life, about any Dharma topics, just whatever. So I wanted to just see. Sometimes it's nice to get a feeling for what's up for you. So I thought we'd start there, see if there's any questions or comments to begin with. Yeah. Oh, Maureen and then John. Yeah.
Did you know that I was really wired and it was very helpful that you did the meditation the way you did? It was very opportune.
I'm glad. I didn't particularly know you were wired.
Thank you. It was like, oh, that was good. Excellent.
I'm glad. That's all. And John had a comment.
So these are just general questions?
To anything. Yep.
So once upon a time, I read a book called The History of God by Karen Armstrong. And I noticed that she wrote a book on the Buddha. And I wondered if you know about that book.
I have not read it. I know that I have heard good things about her writings, but no, I don't know.
Thank you.
Don't know much about that. Yeah. And do use the mic, yeah.
So right now I'm struggling with building compassion for myself and not being driven by fear all the time. As in, like, I feel like I'm doing fairly well in my life. I have a blessed life, so to say. But the way I have managed to get, the way I have operated is by fear driving my actions.
Yeah.
And I am kind of fatigued by that motivation. And I'm struggling to get out of that frame of operation. And so I was wondering if you have thoughts on that. Mm-hmm.
So first, I will just say that you've noticed a lot. You know, you're noticing kind of the habit of how your motivations have been driving you, and that they've not been so helpful. And, you know, I think you're also noticing, and this is something that the Buddha pointed to in one very succinct statement. He said, whatever one frequently ponders, that becomes the inclination of the mind. And so if we, you know, frequently engage from a particular perspective, it digs that rut, so to speak. And it does, it is hard. It's hard to shift out of it. And yet, you know, I have seen in my own practice the possibility that mindfulness offers, that this practice offers for helping us to shift even very difficult patterns in our lives. And so that's the first thing I'll say, is that there is hope. And especially given that there's some, you know, interest and commitment, it sounds like, on your part to shift. I think when we see, you know, this isn't helpful. When we see that the way we've engaged is not, as I think you said, you're growing weary or tired of this way of being. And so there's some part of you that understands this is not the way to well-being. And that's really a place where we begin in terms of a shift of perspective. This whole, the Buddha's whole path and journey kind of involved a shift along those lines around our ordinary or everyday ways of engaging, of thinking, of how we need to do things. Fear being one very big motivation. You know, desire or wanting to have things to be another motivation. I think there may be, you know, different personalities may be motivated by different kind of baseline motivations. And so, we all have our own habitual ways of our habitual ways of thinking happiness is going to come to us. And when we start to look at those habitual ways, we often do see that they're not very satisfying, and that ultimately they do exhaust us, they wear us out. So this is the first, I'm just really happy to hear that this is where you're beginning this question, because it means there's a kind of an interest. What I hear is an interest in how can I find another way? And that really was where the Buddha began his journey too. He said something like, why am I seeking for happiness in things that are impermanent and unreliable? That my whole way of navigating this life is based on trying to find happiness in things that are impermanent and unreliable. Does anybody know a different way? And so he's said to have had that kind of question. Is there another way? And his own journey reveals that there is another way. And, paradoxically, in a way, it involves... there's two sides of it, really. I mean, you mentioned compassion. You mentioned wanting to cultivate more compassion for yourself in your question, and that's a side of the effort that we can make, is to look at what are different qualities that we're interested in cultivating, and exploring the possibility of engaging in those: compassion, love, wisdom, generosity. And so there are some practices and tools for bringing up those more wholesome qualities. And then the other side of the equation is, I'm exploring right now the teaching of right effort, which basically says that in our spiritual journey, we kind of need to look at cultivating the wholesome, those qualities of compassion, love, wisdom, patience, determination, concentration, many, many qualities, confidence, faith, and then letting go of the unwholesome qualities, those qualities based in greed, aversion, and delusion, fear being often, I think, in the aversive side of things, kind of like don't want to be associated with that. So those two sides of the equation, the cultivating the wholesome and the letting go of or shifting away from the unwholesome, we can work on both sides of that. And in my own experience, a lot of my work has come around the letting go of the challenge, letting go of the unwholesome. And that has been not through pushing it away or saying that it was wrong or bad, but really by opening to it as, oh, this is what's going on. This is when fear is arising. And so this is the shift of using mindfulness to look at the very things that we think that are basically our struggles. Rather than feeling like the struggles, like the fear is... a problem to be solved, exploring the possibility of, well, maybe there can be mindfulness of fear. And so this is a shift that the Buddha pointed to around our difficult patterns. So in the letting go of or abandoning the unwholesome, often we think of that word of abandoning as being an active thing of getting rid of it or, figuring out how to push it away, an active form of letting go. But often the letting go in our practice is more kind of cultivating the conditions for wisdom to help the mind let go of the difficulties. And the conditions for cultivating that wisdom is to begin to really turn towards the experience of whatever difficult pattern there is: fear, anger, confusion, impatience, irritation, annoyance, frustration, all, so many different habits of mind that we just habitually are involved in because we have frequently pondered them. A lot of the way is, instead of having a relationship with those difficult states being either that we have to get rid of them, push them away, that they're a problem somehow, or buying into them. I think that's often what we think. These are the only options. You know, it's like either I believe that fear, I believe that kind of pattern, I believe that this is something that's important to follow through on, or I need to get rid of it. And the mind doesn't quite have the understanding at times of something in the middle. How do we might maybe approach this in a different way entirely? And this is really what the Buddha was pointing to with the middle path, is maybe how can we meet these things in a different way? And mindfulness really offers a middle path for us. And so the exploration is when it's possible, and it's not always possible. So I'll talk about a variety of approaches. But when it's possible with really challenging, difficult emotions like fear, or, you know, first of all, it's beginning to recognize, oh, this is actually what the motivation is. I don't know if you knew that for all your life, or whether it's kind of come to you more recently in exploring with your practice what actually has been the deeper motivations. Often it does take a little bit of work to get there, to see, oh, that's actually what's been driving me all this time. And so when we see it, then that's the first kind of deepening of some wisdom. It's like, oh, that's what's been motivating me. I've been motivated by anger for my life, or by fear, or by just, you know, running after the pleasant, whatever it is. We really begin to see what our habits of mind are. But instead of feeling like it's a problem when we discover it, I mean, this is kind of the habitual mind, when it understands, wow, you know, I've been motivated by fear for this whole, you know, for so much of my life, and it's not been helpful. So how can I get rid of it? You know, so we feel like it's a problem to be solved, that we should be able to figure out how to solve it. But instead of that approach, the Buddha encourages something different, which is, rather than either expressing or repressing those feelings, to turn towards the experience of it. So instead of like trying of oh, this is fear, what am I supposed to do about this? It's, oh, fear is happening. What is the human? What is it like to be a human being that's experiencing fear? So this is, you know, this is the turning towards the experience with mindfulness, and you know, it is a I would say it's a, you know, it's a journey to go through this kind of approach. You know, the medicine that the Buddha offers is not like, you know, take a pill and everything's great. It's quite a process of working with. And you know, so there's times when we can begin to explore these difficult states with mindfulness, and we can allow it. You know, the allowing was a piece I brought into the guided meditation. And so this, you know, this question of what does it mean to allow fear? You know, this doesn't mean that allowing fear doesn't mean that we follow through on it, or let it express itself, or let it carry us into motivation. What allowing fear means is, I'm not going to try to resist it or push it away. I'm going to see if the mindfulness can hold it. And so when we can see, oh, this is actually a deeper motivation, can I feel into that? Can I know that experience? And a lot it can help to come into the actual physical experience, how those emotions are expressing in the body. How does it make the body feel? How does it affect our moods, all other moods? You know, does it make us feel frustrated or anxious? So, you know, there's a lot that goes on. What kind of thoughts does it produce. So kind of a curiosity. Can we have a curiosity about what is this human experience of fear? That shift from being motivated by fear, you know, following through on the fear, or somehow believing that the fear is a problem that needs to be solved, a shift from to simply, oh, this is fear. What is it like? Can I know this? It's like a radically different approach to the fear. It may not sound like that much. You know, it's like we do know when we're experiencing these difficult things that we're experiencing them. And, you know, sometimes that's what it sounds like mindfulness means. I know what's happening while it's happening. But the real turning is this curiosity. What is it like to be a human being experiencing this? And sometimes that question or that framing also helps, because often with something like fear or many of these reactive emotions, there's a lot of taking it personally. You know, it's me that's feeling the fear, and it's my problem, and I need to fix it. Instead of this kind of turning towards, well, this is a human experience. And how is it experienced as a human being? That can help to take some of the personal sting out of it a little bit. And also, if we can recognize, you know, the one of my favorite ways to approach something like this is, you know, as I began to work on some of my deeper patterns like this, for me, anger was probably my go-to strategy. And you know, as I started looking at that anger, I lost the thread of what particular point I was going to bring in. Let me just back up a bit. Well, it's not coming, so I'll come in from another direction. So turning towards the experience, you know, sometimes we might find that, so the curiosity, I think the curiosity is a big piece of it. When we can be curious about the experience, that's what it was. It was the conditioning. I found my way back to it. So another thing that I found really helpful as I began, I was talking about taking it personally. We take these reactive emotions personally. And, you know, sometimes we can begin to see just how conditioned this is. You know, the things that really supported me as I started to really see this over and over again, this pattern of anger over and over again, I began to see just how much I had done it. You know, just how deeply ingrained this pattern was in my life. How many times it was my go-to strategy. And also began to see, you know, I didn't do this too much as a reflection, you know, to think about, well, where did I come from and what was my life like? But I began to recognize as I explored the anger, you know, oh, this is the experience, this is the human experience of anger. What's happening now? Here are the feelings, here are the thoughts. I began to see how connected it was, not only to the way, you know, I engaged in the world, but kind of patterns and a deeper conditioning what would we call it? Like, you know, familial conditioning or cultural too. But yeah, I mean, you know, in my case, it really felt like it was patterns repeating through generational. That was the word I was looking for. You know, it was generational kind of conditioning. And it's like, well, as I began to see that, you know, it's like, of course this mind goes this direction. You know, it was almost like a little relief of, you know, the conditions that I've been in since I was, you know, who knows for how long, you know, the Buddha's understanding brings in lifetimes of conditioning that may be affecting us now. But, you know, at least since the time I was born, you know, there's been these kind of, you know, demonstrations and movements of this is a way to get through life. You know, you do these kinds of things. And the conditioning there was just like, oh, this isn't personal. You know, this is just conditions unfolding. And so I came up with myself just a reminder. It's like, well, of course this is happening. That, for me, that of course recognition was so helpful. You know, it really helped me to let go of the kind of owning it as my thing. I mean, it's in a way we do need to take the responsibility for its, you know, its manifestation here and now. It's, you know, it's like in our bodies and minds and our actions and choices, these things get expressed. And it is our responsibility, you know, how this being expresses itself. And yet, you know, the conditioning is so impersonal. And so sometimes that reflection can be really helpful to just remember, right? You know, this is a kind of generational pattern, a cultural pattern, a historical pattern. Of course this is happening. For me, that kind of created a little space to make it easier to look at the pattern as a human pattern and not take it so personally, not have the sense of how you know, why me? You know, why am I experiencing this? And, you know, I'm the only one in the world that has these problems. You know, our minds kind of create this, you know, we're the thing around which the whole universe revolves, essentially. So those are a couple of things that might help to explore it. And yet you know, the coming and going of our capacity to be able to allow our difficult emotions, you know, so sometimes we also have to recognize, yeah, maybe this isn't the time to investigate this. And certainly in the midst of daily life, you know, if something's happened in the midst of daily life and you're having to make a snap decision, a snap judgment, you know, where it's like you need to make this decision right now, or, you know, you're in a pressured situation at work and it's like, can I say stop and, you know, turn and look at my motivations? Well, maybe not. You know, maybe not in daily life. We may not be able to do that. And so we do the best we can. Maybe recognizing a flash of fear, and this is how I explored this. It's like, you know, oh, you know, this pattern. Yeah, I'm seeing it all over the place. And so in daily life, there's a little bit of a different kind of approach. We can explore in sitting practice, we can explore a little more time, perhaps, you know, if we're seeing it come up in our minds while we're sitting, we can take some time to explore with some space. You know, it's like we don't have to do anything in that moment, so we can, what is this fear like, and how does it manifest in the body? And maybe I can just know that feeling of like fluttering and agitation through this whole area. And so in sitting practice, we can take that time. In daily life, what I found helpful is if I could just even recognize for a split second, oh yeah, there's that motivation of anger again. Oh yeah, there's that impatience. And just knowing that it was happening, even if I wasn't really able to, you know, say stop to the situation and you know, slow things down, at least I was aware of it. And then, you know, it might help me at times be able to maybe, you know, shift to make a slightly different decision, or to recognize, okay, whatever decision is made here, I need to be, you know, potentially aware that there's some of my habitual motivation going on. So, and the other thing I often like to say in daily life is, you know, just get really good at recognizing kind of the outcome of what happens as a result of making choices, you know, from those habits. Sometimes you know, it can make kind of a mess, and you know, just get really good at cleaning up the mess. Grounding yourself in non-harming, I think, is really helpful in daily life. But I found it really, really helpful in daily life. Actually, this was my very first mindfulness practice, to look at the difficult emotion. For me, it was anger. You know, it was the anger was pretty much ruling my life, and ruining my life. It was very, very painful, and it, you know, kept me from functioning well at times. I got so angry I couldn't really function very well at times. And so my very first practice, you know, somebody sent me some guidance on being mindful and aware, and like, I wasn't very interested in meditating, but I was really interested in understanding my mind. And so in retrospect, I see that the curiosity was a real support for me. You know, I was curious to, you know, what can I learn about this? I read in this book it would be helpful to learn something about it, so what can I learn about it? So there's a tiny bit of faith that maybe, you know, a different approach would help, and this curiosity. And so I would just notice when I was angry. You know, sometimes it would be I was in a rage and, you know, kind of frozen, and I didn't know what to do with it very much. I mean, I didn't have a lot of guidance or meditation instructions at that point, but I was aware, yep, wow, this is anger. And I was also aware in that moment, this hurts. This is painful. And my next thought, you know, in that very first time I became aware of anger in my daily life, was, wow, I don't know what to do with this. I guess I just go back to work. And, you know, in retrospect, that was a really important moment, because I could put it aside and just go back to work. Having seen it, having become aware of it, there was some choice that was possible around it. And so over the course of the next few months, just watching it, seeing it, you know, sometimes it would just be a little flash of it. It's like, oh, yep, there it is again. And it'd just be like, I would just notice it and go on with my day. And so it became a kind of an orienting practice. I kind of committed myself that I would know when it was happening. And so you could explore that too. It's like, just in daily life, you know, where does fear come up? Small and large. Because the pattern, the fear pattern, is probably pretty much shot through a lot of your life. I noticed with impatience and anger, you know, the impatience is kind of one of the little tiny flavors of anger. You know, just this little bit of like, well, this isn't worth my time. You know, I found it was like everywhere. I was brushing my teeth and I'd be impatient, and I was getting out of the shower and I'd be impatient. It's like, this is amazing. It's everywhere. And seeing it or recognizing it, if we can be a kind of not discouraged by that, but rather encouraged that we're seeing it, it can be, you know, a great opening, because we begin to see that the seeing of it, just in split seconds, the seeing of just a little flash of anger is like opening a drawer, and there's a little flash of like, it gets stuck. It's like, you know, I pull a little hard, and it's like, oh, there's some anger there, you know? It's just seeing it gives the mind an opportunity to do something different with it. And it also gives your... in daily life, you know, this, I'm a big proponent of exploring things in daily life, because, and this was my very first thing, you know, I didn't sit down to meditate for 2 or 3 months after I started doing this practice. You know, there was a lot of benefit I gained by observing my anger in daily life, until at some point I thought, well, maybe it'll help me to meditate. So I kind of stumbled into the meditation after the fact, after I had been doing some mindfulness practice. And so the, you know, the seeing of those little flashes of anger and impatience kind of helped the mind to be able to, you know, just get familiar with it. You know, to almost begin to see it coming in a way. And again, to have a little bit more space and a little bit more choice around it. So, you know, as you start to explore a habit like this, just, you know, just making a commitment, you know, I'm going to see this whenever it comes up in my daily life. Notice it when it happens. And then, you know, if there is, if you do have some space and time, you know, like sometimes I had some space and time to look at it and reflect on it and explore it a little bit, maybe for a couple minutes. Other times I would not, and then it would be like, well, there it is, and I guess I just get on with my day. So just that, but just that kind of knowing those little tiny moments, those moments, begins to attune our mind to that pattern and helps us to gain some skill in meeting it and working with it. Especially when we see it in the small. That's actually when I started seeing those little flashes of impatience, I began to see, you know, these things, when I wasn't aware of them, they were actually affecting me. The more I could become aware of them, the more it would be like, oh, there's impatience. Oh, of course. Okay. And I can kind of, you know, not let it drive the bus, so to speak. So we can, you know, start to get familiar with our patterns, even in the small, because the way our minds work, you know, that statement of the Buddha's, whatever one frequently ponders becomes the inclination of the mind. You know, the way our minds work there is that it's kind of like we do something with a particular inclination of the mind, and the next time we do it, it's like the, you know, it's like, oh yeah, that's important, and the pattern just gets reinforced. And so the, you know, in a way, the when we follow through on a pattern like that, it's like we're just digging the groove a little bit deeper, a little bit deeper, a little bit deeper. And so when we see a pattern in the small, you know, a little flash of fear or a little flash of impatience, it's like it's a similar kind of pattern, just kind of in a smaller situation. So the skills that we gain in those seeing, in the seeing of the smaller ones, help us to begin to be able to see it when it's bigger. I've certainly seen this happening. So that's a piece that I really would encourage, is having seen or identified fear as kind of the main motivator to get curious about fear. Where is it in your life? You know, just all the small and large ways. And then there are times when we won't be able to do much with it, you know, where it will be too large, too overwhelming. And at those times, it's useful to learn some skills to help you step aside from it, you know, turning your attention to something else, you know, just taking a walk or putting your attention in something really easy to connect with for a little while. You know, for a period of time when I was working with this, with the anger, I recognized that whenever I tried, you know, even in daily life, you know, I would see, you know, there was one particular anger that was really kind of sticky for me. And sometimes I would see that particular anger come up, and I would like try to turn towards it, but it was so sticky. The thoughts and the whole like scenario around it was so compelling. I was just ready to jump on the story of it and like write it into anger. And so I saw that it wasn't so helpful to try to turn towards it, because the energy of the anger was so sticky. So I would see kind of just the beginning of the anger. You know, it'd be like, yep, oh, okay, let's not go there. And so I would, you know, seeing that, I would just go, I would be kind of like, I would say, I see you, and yeah, my mindfulness isn't strong enough for this right now, so I'm going to put my attention in my feet, and I'm going to take a walk. You know, so just something simple, something neutral to turn the attention to. So I would say that a lot of transformation can happen by this willingness to look directly at what you see is the deeper motivation that feels like it's the problem. You know, to actually not hold it as a problem, but actually hold it as this is the suffering that the Buddha actually asked us to look at, to understand our minds. So that's a huge way the transformation can happen. And, you know, I'll also just say a little bit, you know, the around the compassion side, you know, really what I would say, you know, what I'm pointing to here in terms of allowing the fear to be there is really, it's kind of, we could hold it as a compassionate mindfulness. And so it is actually cultivating that quality of an open heart, of an allowing heart, of a heart of recognizing, you know, what is compassion actually? Is the heart that is able to not turn away from suffering. And when you're looking at your own experience, fear arising is a form of suffering. And to not turn away from that, but instead to kind of envelop it in this curiosity and mindfulness, that is a form of compassion. So I want to say that, first of all, because, you know, sometimes we think we have to, like, put that aside, put that fear aside and cultivate the compassion. But actually, it can happen together. And yet sometimes, as I said, you know, that sometimes we have to step aside from the difficulty. And it may be that in that stepping aside, it might be a recognition of, yes, this is the compassionate thing to do right now. Because if I stay with it, it's going to just pull me in, and I'm just going to, you know, end up getting lost in it again. And so sometimes the stepping aside is the compassionate response. And so it can be helpful to recognize it as such. You know, I might have originally in that kind of thought, oh, you know, my mindfulness isn't strong enough, so, well, maybe someday I'll be able to meet that. But, you know, at some point my mind shifted to more realizing, no, this is actually skillful. This is a compassionate response to not have my mind go down that well-greased slope. And so there's that, you know, that possibility of recognizing the compassion there. And I think a lot of the cultivation of the wholesome, you know, I've just been talking about the abandoning of the unwholesome through mindfulness, essentially. You know, that the, in my experience, the holding the difficult patterns, the reactive patterns with mindfulness, created conditions for the mind to begin to, you know, let go of it. It began to understand it was heading somewhere that was going to lead it to suffering, and it just kind of began to say, you know, the wisdom was growing, and the wisdom began to say, yeah, that's not so helpful. We don't need to do that. So the mindfulness of the difficulties creates the conditions for the wisdom to help those difficulties to release, to begin to weaken. It's like, you know, we're no longer digging those grooves. We're creating a different kind of relationship to them. And then on the side of the wholesome states, the looking at cultivating compassion, for instance, well, one of the places or ways to encourage the wholesome states is also to be mindful of them. And so the recognition that maybe, yeah, in this moment, this is not helpful, so it's the compassionate thing to step aside, to acknowledge and recognize, yes, this is compassion. This is helpful. That will support the cultivation of compassion. It may be a little paradoxical to think that in one situation, mindfulness creates the conditions for the letting go of something, for the weakening of patterns. But in the side of the wholesome, it creates the conditions for the strengthening of those patterns. And so as we become aware, oh yeah, that's a compassionate response, as we notice the quality of compassion arising, the awareness of that will strengthen it. And so since you brought up both fear and compassion, you know, just when you notice compassion arising, you may have this be the flip side of your daily life practice. It's like, be mindful of that. Take it in. What does it feel like? What is it like to be a human being that's experiencing compassion? It has a completely different feeling than fear. So, you know, just get familiar with that. And then, you know, the cultivation of compassion, sometimes we might just remind ourselves, you know, I found sometimes reminding myself of, again, you know, the kind of wisdom that supports compassion is, at least for me, is this recognition of, right, this is suffering and it's conditioned. You know, so if we were to look at somebody else in that situation and realize, yeah, you know, they're just living out their history, and they're caught by their history, you know, there might be a sense of a kind of an open-hearted kind of, oh, I feel for them. I feel for them for that challenge. And so that recognition can help to create that movement towards compassion. And then there is the kind of more direct cultivation of compassion, which is just turning the mind, inclining the mind in that direction through essentially thinking thoughts that are compassionate. So thoughts are powerful, and you know, this statement that I said earlier, you know, whatever we frequently ponder becomes the inclination of the mind. That refers a lot to thoughts as well. And so if we're frequently, you know, our habits have us frequently pondering particular directions of thought. I mean, the fear, all of these habitual emotional responses often come with particular thoughts. And the kind of buying into those thoughts, thinking those thoughts, kind of reinforces that pattern a little bit. And so thoughts are powerful, and sometimes we can replace thoughts. So if we find ourselves thinking thoughts of fear, we could instead replace those consciously. May I be free from this suffering? May there be ease with this suffering? And so that brings in different thoughts, and those you know, those thoughts, at first for myself at least, when I started using those kinds of thoughts, it didn't have much of a feeling effect. But as you play with it, you know, a way that I learned to do this is to, you know, let that thought come up in the mind and then see, how does it feel to have had that thought? So may I be free from this suffering. Check into the heart. How is it? How does that thought land with the heart? Maybe there's not much feeling about it at first, but I did find over time that as I did that kind of more often and more repetitively, that just every now and then I might feel just this little like, oh, yeah, kind of like a, yeah, I resonate with that thought. May I be free from this suffering. And that feeling level, that's connected to the compassion. And so that can create, you know, some of the cultivation of that quality. There's a lot around compassion that can be explored. And there are, you know, there are self-compassion courses that are worth taking. If there's a resonance for you with cultivating compassion, actively cultivating it, it would probably be worth, you know, getting some training there to take some courses in that, because that can really support us then to be able to hold the challenge. So, you know, both sides, both the cultivating the wholesome, the letting go of the difficulty through the being mindful of it. Both sides are, they support each other, you know, that when we gain some skill in the side of compassion, that compassion then can begin to infuse the mindfulness. And it just becomes much more of a piece that they kind of work together. So that was a long response. But it's a big question. You know, there's a lot there. So I hope that was useful. And are there any follow-up thoughts you have around anything?
Actually, a lot.
So, use the mic.
Yeah, sorry. You talk of fear.
Is the mic on? Is it on?
Yeah,
okay.
So you talk of the fear or anger in your case as sort of as a pill or a groove that you sort of dig into, right? And I find myself trying to get out of this groove, but then I feel like the easiest way to get out of it would be to find another groove to get into.
Uh-huh.
And you kind of mentioned it that like work towards a wholesome groove.
Yes, a wholesome groove. Yes.
But I feel like an easier way would be just to find another unwholesome groove to...
Yes, and if you can recognize to not go that route, you know, uh-huh. like, yeah, it would be easiest to, like, just turn on the television and space out, you know, yeah. Not so helpful. So finding, I mean, I think mindfulness is a different groove also. You know, being mindful of the reactive state, that is a different groove. That is a wholesome groove because it cultivates the wholesome quality of mindfulness. But you know, sometimes that's not possible. So it may be useful to cultivate some compassion, some loving kindness, and see if that can be a wholesome groove to shift to. But if you are looking at both sides of the mindfulness of it and cultivating compassion, that will be really supportive for you. And I think you already recognize that finding another unwholesome groove is not going to be so helpful. You know, because, you know, often if we find another unwholesome groove, you know, it's like it just loops back around to our old groove. You know, it just ends up reinforcing that same groove somehow because it's so deeply embedded. So it really does take, I mean, for me, it really took, it really took a lot of suffering is what it took, you know. It took my recognizing everything else I've tried has not worked. And it's like, you know, does somebody know a way of dealing with this? And, I, you know, a friend sent me a book, and it's like, well, I don't see how this is going to work, but, you know, nothing else has worked. Maybe I can try this. So, you know, it really was kind of hitting bottom for me that, you know, I think I had kind of shifted to... You know, there may be some less unwholesome grooves. You know, there may be some really unwholesome grooves and some less unwholesome grooves. You know, I think I had tried a lot of things like, you know, affirmations and, you know, all kinds of things I'd tried. And nothing really seemed to get much traction for me until I really just found this path to start just looking at it. So it is possible. I am here to tell you it is possible. It is not easy. And, you know, sometimes it does take a certain level of suffering to be able to commit to what has to happen, you know, to be able to turn towards these things with mindfulness. Because, you know, we turn towards fear with mindfulness. We turn towards anger with mindfulness. It does not feel good. You know, what we get in that moment is the recognition, yeah, this is suffering. And, you know, our whole being, our whole system wants to go to its habits of, and how do I get away from this? And so we kind of have to hold ourselves with some compassion there of like a different way, maybe. Maybe understanding this is the human experience. Maybe there is a different way. And I will say that in my own experience with this, you know, the first few months of this practice of just looking at it in daily life, within a couple of months, there was substantial change. It was substantial enough for me to recognize, this way is what works. And so I was willing to keep going. You know, so it actually didn't take that long for me to understand that this way of using the mindfulness was onward leading and would help me to ultimately release. I mean, just one little moment of recognizing the mind, seeing the kind of the heading towards the anger, you know, that kind of sense of, yeah, I'm going to like get in board with that thought and I'm really going to get angry. Seeing the mind headed that way, you know, the mind realized in that moment, having spent so much time recognizing the suffering of that anger, the mind just said, I don't think so. And it just let it go. And I didn't do that. You know, I would not have known how to let that go. But the practice of being with that anger and knowing anger is suffering, that was the education my mind actually needed. Because when we understand, because when we're normally kind of functioning in our usual habitual way around these patterns of fear and anger and all of these reactive emotions, we're not so clear that the reactivity itself is suffering. We have believed that that reactivity is what's going to help us get out of suffering. So we've believed that that fear is what's going to help us get out of suffering, or that anger is what's going to help us get away from the problem. And so we have bought into its kind of story that it's the way to finding happiness, you know, it's the way to go. And, you know, when we turn towards the direct experience of it, we know viscerally it is not the way to go. And that is how wisdom develops. You know, the wisdom develops, and then, you know, as my mind saw itself headed there, it's going, yeah, I know that way lies a lot of suffering. And it just released it. And that, I would say that moment, you know, that seeing that moment, that was probably 3 months into my time of this exploration. That moment was the moment I got hooked on this practice, because it's like, I didn't have to let that go, and it just let go. You know, it was seeing the non-arising of anger. You know, I stood there waiting to get angry, and I didn't get angry. That was the apple. Yes, that was the apple. I'm sorry. What was the insight? What was there instead was, well, after just for moments, it was just the non-arising of anger. It was the kind of amazement that I'm not getting angry. And then what happened was, wow, this stuff is powerful. This is amazing. And there was like this joy that came that the mind had not gone there. So, you know, and that moment was just like, okay, I'm on board. You know, I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. Because there was just that, just in a little moment, there was the understanding of the power, of how powerful it could be to see something in the moment. And, you know, there were years of looking at anger following that moment. You know, that moment wasn't the silver bullet to you're never angry again. It was the moment that made me realize this was a way in which the mind could transform anger. But there was a lot of work following that. But yeah, there's so much possibility of transformation. Yeah. And it's time to stop. So thank you for your question.